right, everyone. Thanks for attending another amazing episode of the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass. Today we have an interesting guest, a new kind of guest, and one I should probably be doing more of. So I think this is the first of many in these series, an educational series. I have Navy veteran Mike Hurley with me today. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Brett. Thanks for the invite to be here.
Yeah, definitely great. So you and I met a couple months ago at a luncheon put on by your employer, NextPoint. And I learned about several of your investment offerings. So just to provide some perspective to our audience, my professional career, besides podcasting, is actually running a wealth management firm. And we do work with veteran entrepreneurs. So my job is to go out there and scour the marketplace for good investment managers to make available to my clients. So NextPoint is one of those managers. And NextPoint does a roadshow every once in a while. They'll invite some advisors to lunch to show, hey, we have this product, but what's going on with the markets here? What's going on with the interest rates? What's going on with inflation? So knowledge is power. And so part of my job is going around as an advisor and learning as much as I can about the market. So my clients ask questions. Hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? I actually have an opinion, crazy concept. So that's the premise of how you and I met. And then as you were presenting, it was like, you had a little reference to the Navy and you kind of shared some backgrounds that we need to talk. So I'm going to shut up. Mike, tell me about your background in the Navy real quick. And thanks for being here again today.
Well, Brett, again, it's a true pleasure and honor to be here with you and your audience. By way of background, you're right. I'm the chief market strategist for NextPoint, which is about a $15 billion asset manager in Dallas. I'm also the CIO or chief investment officer for a small wealth management firm like yours. We also have some clients where we try and navigate these crazy markets and make sure we can make people money and keep them safe during these turbulent times. But before then, as you mentioned, like you, I spent some time in the military, which is probably some of my fondest memories of all. I was in the Navy from 1986 to 1984. I'm absolutely the luckiest.
Wait, 86 to 84? 86 to 94.
86 to 94. Okay, I'm sorry if I misspoke. And I'm absolutely the luckiest guy in the world because I'm one of the few guys who got everything he wanted. I got the airplane I wanted to fly. I got the boat I wanted to fly. I got to do two cruises on the USS Roosevelt. One was a love boat cruise. One was Desert Storm, which was not as many ports, but a whole lot of good flying. And I just have been very fortunate and blessed in both of those careers.
Awesome. So thanks for sharing that, by the way. And so you're a goose, basically. Everyone who's listening, he was goose, but he did a little bit more than goose, right? And so just a candid story before we go on into serious stuff. So we were chatting. You're like, hey, I'm wearing my blue and gold for you today, which is the Navy colors, obviously. And I'm like, I'm wearing my flannel just so it really hides my toothpaste stains from where we brush our teeth. So made myself a little vulnerable and shared, like, I cannot brush my teeth with my electric toothbrush without toothpaste going everywhere. And just, I can't, the vibrations or whatever just goes everywhere, especially my mustache, and it stays there for a while. So I always have to wash my mustache after I brush my teeth. But if I'm wearing a shirt, just because I don't know the vibrations or what it is, but I always get like toothpaste on my shirt. So when you wear a flannel, you can let it blend in a little bit. It's okay. And it's wintertime too. And when you work from home, it's okay. But I do take off the toothpaste shirt before I go out in public. So maybe I should have shared that.
Well, it's a frag pattern. It's one of the things we learn in the military. You got to stay out of the frag pattern.
Right.
And as I was mentioning to you, Brett, I've had trouble with that too. And I don't have my facial hair anymore like you do. But that's why I do mine in the shower. And I hope that's not TMI, but you just lift up and wash when you're doing it.
It's real advice, man. It's real advice. Like, how do you get through your day? You got every decision you make impacts your future. And if you're deciding to brush your teeth out of shirt, you got electric toothbrush, or brush in the shower so you don't get toothpaste all over your shirt. So that's a great way to start adding some value to our listeners. So thanks again for being here, Mike. So what today's a little bit different, or why today's a little bit different. Normally we have veterans on that are leaders in corporate America like you, but it's more of a business discussion. And this is business for you and business for me. It's a little different in that you're in the investment world. So this is actually, your firm is a potential solution for some of my clients, right? So for disclosure purposes right now, to keep my compliance team happy, we must share that anything we talk about today is not considered specific individual advice. This is for entertainment purposes only. And if you want to see if any of the investments are appropriate for you, do speak with a licensed financial advisor. So I have to say that. And future return, there's no guarantee of future returns. And what do we say? Future returns or past returns are no guarantee of future results or all that good stuff. So this is for entertainment. This is for fun. This is for education. This is not advice. There's no recommendations here. So.
Well, and I agree with you, and I would echo it. Though that's good advice. And I mean it sincerely when I say, anytime you're talking about navigating the markets, you really should stick to a professional And I know you have a great business there, Brett. And thank you for being a client of ours and using our products. This is not something you should do at home and do on your own, because the consequences really can be severe.
And let's talk about that. Let's jump into what are the consequences? Or so what I think we should do is paint the picture. What is going on with the markets when people are looking at the stock market? Here's some news, the S&P, the NASDAQ, rates, inflation, like what the heck is going on out there? And so first and foremost, let's talk about where we are today. And would you say like thumbs up, thumbs down, or kind of in the middle, you know, where we are today? And then let's talk about 6 months out and maybe a year out. How does that sound? Does that work with your mojo?
That's absolutely great. And I appreciate the fact that you've been to our luncheons in the past and kind of know what I do speak about. But I'd like to start, Brett, with what you said about the consequences. And I'm going to just make a quick little motherhood comment on that. You know, markets trend in both directions. And people often forget that. And they often forget it right about the time they're about ready to make a turning point. And so when you've been in a bear market like we have been for the last year or so, or through the bulk of 2022, again, it's February of 23 now, people get conditioned to think the market's always going to go down and it's about the time it turns. Similarly, about a year ago, the market had been going up for a couple of years off those COVID lows in 2020, and everybody thought it was all clear forever. Well, they certainly got a rude awakening when 2022 had the worst first 6 months to a year since 1970. So again, markets trend in both directions, and you really want to make sure you're working with a professional or keeping tabs on them, because it's not something you can go to sleep on. So with that as the background, I would say right now here in February of 23, I'm starting to like the markets.
So you just mentioned that, you know, markets trend both ways. And I remember part of my training through the CIMA designation, the Certified Investment Management Analyst designation through Wharton, we learned from Dr. Richard Marston that the markets on average are up 3 years and then down 1 year. So every 4 years, the market's up 75% of the time, then down 25% of the time. That's historically going back to 1920 something. We can pull those stats up. So yeah, you got to remember it's normal. Markets go in both ways. People forget the markets do go both ways. And if you understand they go both ways, you can actually prosper from that, right? Because the markets are down, you can take advantage. Prices are down. It's like gasoline. Who wants to buy gas at $6 a gallon? I'd rather wait till it's $3 a gallon, unless you need it. Unless you need it, right? You got to pay what you got to pay. Then you will pay. That's why gas is. They could do that. But if something's on sale, you buy more of it at a lower price, right? So when the markets are down, it's not always bad. It's an opportunity at the same time.
It is. And again, you don't want to be blindsided by all of a sudden falling into one of those 4 years that do happen on average every 4 year. There's a 4 year presidential cycle. There's a 4 year stock market cycle. And again, you can look back historically and find those bottoms that do happen approximately every 4 years. And similarly, there's a top about every 4 years. And to get caught in something like we got caught in 2022 can really do some damage to your portfolio and your psyche. And again, set you back some time on your road to retirement. So it's important to know where you are in those market cycles.
So you said when we start the call, you feel a little more optimistic now. Is that, can I use the word optimistic? I'm allowed to quote a feeling that you have, or now the market versus several months ago?
I think you can. And if you'd like, I can show a quick slide here. Would you like me to share my screen, Brett?
You're empowered.
Okay, so let me share my screen here. I do follow the markets pretty closely. And I also have a slide deck that I show to folks like you when we do our lunches. One of them is on the stock market and where we are in the current cycle. And that is this slide here. And while there's a lot of squiggly lines on it, I want to start by giving a little bit more of my background. And there are a lot of folks out there who try and figure out the market through economists or through economic indicators who are called economists or fundamental analysts who look at company earnings and things like that. Well, by way of background, I'm a CMT. So if you look at the chart to the right, we've got the S&P 500 on the top, and I'm going to try and put on a laser pointer here. I hope it works.
And do me one other favor, Mike. Remember, actually, you were showing the slide, but a lot of our listeners are just doing audio only. So if you could talk through the concepts too, it'd be great.
Will do. So on the chart on the right, we've got the S&P going back just about 3 years to those COVID lows around 2020. And if you look at the chart, you can see the S&P trended nicely higher into the end of 2021 or the start of 2022.
So if you're looking, I'm just going to jump in. So if you're just listening and you're not watching, imagine a roof. So going up is like one side of the roof, then it peaked. It looks like it's coming down the other side of the roof. So that's the visual. If you're not looking at this on YouTube and you're just listening, it's imagine a chart that looks like a roof.
Exactly. An A-frame roof to be specific. And the peak of that A-frame is right around Christmas of 2021. And to the left side of the chart, you can see a nice steady uptrend. And I've got some lines below the S&P, and one is the advanced decline line here in brown. Well, that measures the number of stocks advancing on the day compared to declining on the day. So normally when the market goes up, you'll see more stocks go up on the day than go down, which is a healthy market.
Right.
But occasionally you'll see that tide start to turn. And that's why I have this vertical red line that is dashed right around the 4th of July of 2021. Because if you look to the left of that line, as you're going up that roof you mentioned, you're seeing market internals like the advanced decline line go up as well. Below that, I've got a little brown mountain that looks like a histogram, that looks like a mountain, and it measures the number of stocks making a new 52-week high. And again, as the index or the S&P makes a new 52-week high, more and more stocks make a new 52-week high, pretty much up until the middle of 21. And the point I'm trying to make on this chart is that it's important, again, to be aware of what market environment you're in. And up until the middle of 21, you were in a healthy advance technically. After that point, or to the right of the red vertical line, you can see the market continue its advance up to that peak in the roof, just like it had been going up. But the advance decline line now is going sideways. Well, how can that be? How can the market averages be going up, but more stocks go down than up? Well, it's because the S&P 500 is market cap weighted. And when Microsoft or Amazon or Apple go up, the index can go up and 10 stocks can go down that are much smaller in size than those behemoths. So that's what you call a divergence, when the index goes higher, but the market internals go lower. And you can also see it in the number of new 52-week highs, making a lower high, even though the S&P 500 was higher.
Those are
the kind of things technicians look for.
So with that, though, one of the concept which is jumping out to me is momentum investing. So if you're a momentum investor, the momentum in the market's going one way, it's either going up or going down historically. And so if you are a momentum investor and you see, hey, the market's going up, but we've got this divergence, that would be a sign that the momentum is slowing and potentially change. Is that a fair assessment?
Precisely. And if you think about physics or throwing a ball at the sky, it has the most momentum right when it leaves your hand. And as it makes a peak in the sky, it's still going up, just up slower and slower. And that's exactly what this market looks like. Or let's just say you find yourself one day in an M1 tank. I'm sure that's a big, heavy piece of machinery. And when you take your foot off the gas, it probably doesn't stop on a dime. It probably slows down, but keeps rolling forward. Same kind of concept in the market. So this top we built in the market right around Christmas of 2021 was classic from a momentum point of view. The other thing that was classic, and I try and explain market cycles to folks when I travel, just like the season, the changing of the seasons, there's spring, summer, winter, fall. And the small light colored dashed line right here around Christmas of 2021 is what I call a fall day. And the reason I call it a fall day is if you look at the chart here of new 52-week highs, that was the first time you saw an expansion of new 52-week lows. So again, the market is up near its highs, and finally you have enough selling to register 400 stocks on the week made a new 52-week low. So there were stocks making new lows even though the market averages were going up. And again, that's what I call a fall day, the first real bout of selling. And that just so happened to occur right during the Omicron scare that happened over that Thanksgiving weekend in 2021. We all got worried about Omicron. I caught Omicron about 2 weeks later. Thank goodness we all survived who did. But again, there was some real stress in the world and some stress in the markets, but that was the first bout of significant selling you saw. And of course, that fall day turned into the winter that we saw in 2022.
That makes sense. So we had almost a decade of positive growth and positive stock market. And then COVID happened, the market shot, but all the stimulus back in the economy from the government propped everything back up. Market rebounded back up. And then 2021, a year after, the momentum seems to have slowed down and the earnings and everything turned around.
Exactly. So we did have the first six months of a year in 22. You can see the bear market or the right side of that roof in the house to the right side of my chart. But the good news, and I guess I'm finally answering your question here, is I am more optimistic on the market here, because if you look at the process we just walked through going into the top, you can now see it at the bottom. The push in June pushed the market down about 3,600, where I have the red horizontal line on the chart. But after we bounced and tested that low, we went only slightly lower in December, but there were fewer new 52-week lows. So we were starting to see some divergences and the market repair itself and firm just the way it weakened a year prior. More recently, and this chart is about 2 weeks old now, you've seen the S&P push back through 4,000, back above its 200-day or 40-week moving average. That's a line a lot of folks use to define the primary trend. We're back above it. The last 2 weeks here, or in February, we've been pulling back to test this breakout, and I think that's the next key area, or we're at the key area right now, which is 3,900 or 3,900 to 3,950 after we pulled back to test this breakout. But again, bottoming is a process, not an event. And it looks like that process of turning the corner is occurring in pretty typical fashion, just as it happened a year ago at the top.
So when you say testing this, that means a slight pullback. So it went up, came back down to that level again. So now we're trying to see if it was going to stay above that or go down. And no one has a crystal ball, right?
Exactly. And market internals, which are what we call these indicators on this chart, can help. But if you look to the left side of the chart where I'm circling here in the S&P 500 with my pointer, you can see a little R and a little S. And this is right after the COVID low. And again, we were in a very similar phase of the market where we're coming off an initial low trying to figure out whether it was a real bottom or just a temporary bottom. Well, we had gotten through that purple dotted line, the 40-week moving average. We had broken above resistance and we pulled back to test it. And that's why I've got the little horizontal dashed blue line here, is because what should, or what was resistance, should become support. The market often acts like an apartment building. What is someone's roof is someone else's floor. And that's the behavior you want to see. Once you get through this roof, it should become a floor. And that's exactly what happened toward the end of 2020 when we held this area and it was a successful test. A test that fails would fall back through those areas, and that would be the market telling you it's not ready to go up meaningfully and it's seeing more weakness than expected. But that's exactly the process we're going through right now. And I hope that as we pull back here to 3,900 or 3,950, that we do see a nice successful test.
Well, we'll be able to get together in 6 months and say, hey, did we call it right? Or did you call it right? Did you see the right way? Yes or no? So hindsight's always 20/20, right? It's always easy to do that. The hard.
Well, it is.
The hard part is saying.
That's why they call it the hard right edge.
Exactly. Okay. So you're cautiously optimistic over the next 6 months.
Absolutely. And over the next 12 or so.
Okay. So with that.
Because if we can put this cyclical bottom in place, you said earlier, it's 3 years up and 1 year down.
Love it. And again, this is not a guarantee. This is not a promise. This is entertainment purposes only, right? Just got to say that. So we don't have a crystal ball, don't have a lamp and a genie, or a genie and a lamp we could rub. So with that though, there's a lot of headwinds, right? We've got interest rates. We've got inflation. So let's talk about that and the impact of inflation and interest rates on the economy overall. Is it good? Is it bad? And how does it impact a business owner?
Brett, that's a good question. And often inflation and rising or declining interest rates can have a huge impact on the markets. And not only the markets, but businesses and things like that. I'm going to back up one slide here and show you a longer term chart.
And just describe it verbally quickly too, because remember, a lot of our listeners aren't on video right now.
Will do. So I backed up one slide of our deck here, and I've got a chart in the top half that is a line that represents the 10-year treasury yield. So if you look to the right of the chart and see some numbers that look like 20, 30, and 40, that's actually 2%, 3%, and 4% on the yield of the 10-year treasury. If you look at the chart from left to right, it goes back to about 1995. So it's a good long-term look, and it shows a pattern of lower lows and lower highs. Now, the line is very choppy and squiggly, but there's a very clear channel there that shows us that interest rates have in general been declining for roughly 40 years, and certainly the 25 years on this chart. And if you think back to the longer term cycles, interest rates rose from 1940 to 1980 or 81, and then they declined from roughly 81 to 21. And so these secular trends in interest rates last quite some time, and they're very, very important and impact all of our lives. The point I'm trying to make on this chart is if you look to the right side, you can see we now have changed that pattern from lower lows and lower highs to one just recently of a higher high or a breakout. Technicians call it breakout and a potential, or I think likely, trend change. In that yield of the 10-year U.S. Treasury recently got up to 4%. Who knows whether it'll be the start of another 40-year trend or not. But again, I think interest rates probably work their way higher over the next upcoming years, if not decades. And that has a huge impact on a lot of areas of our lives, you know, our business, our finances, our investments, and just across the board. I think it's a underreported and an underappreciated fact right now.
Well, let me ask a question. So as you're sharing this with me, what's triggering my mind is you said it's a 40-year decline since the 80s, pretty much till now. And then before that was from the 40s to the 80s was an increase in the 80s. I don't remember it, but I remember hearing stories of investors saying they had CDs getting 16% and crazy interest rates, and mortgages were 13% back then. Something that's jumping out in my mind, though, right now is the amount of debt the United States has. We have more debt now than we've ever had before. So if interest rates are going higher, the cost to service that debt, to pay that debt, the interest being created to pay that debt down is more expensive. Just like mortgage rates were 2%, now they're 4, 5, 6. It's more expensive to have the same asset. It costs more. The cost of money is more. How does the United States, with the amount of debt it has, handle, what's the impact of higher interest rates with the amount of debt the U.S. has now versus what it's had in the past? Any thoughts on that?
Well, it's a great question, and I don't think anybody knows how this plays out. That's the ultimate crystal ball or, you know, genie we'd like to make a wish on. But just like a family, it can't be good. And it's like finding yourself on the wrong end of an arm, because a lot of the U.S. national debt is, you know, financed over shorter term paper. And while the chart we're looking at shows interest rates in that 3.5 to 4 range on the 10-year U.S. Treasury, we have an inverted yield curve, right?
So inverted, for our listeners, what's an inverted yield curve and what does it mean?
Yes. And in fact, I'm going to go up a couple slides to my summary page. And now we've got a lot of charts on the summary page, but on the left-hand side in the middle, I have a chart of the 10-year Treasury shorter, but I've got the 3-month Treasury rate in a green line. And the point is, you can see in November of last year, the green line crosses above the black bars, which means the interest you can get by putting your money away for 3 months is now higher than by loaning your money to the government for 10 years. Now, that's a very unusual situation, and it doesn't happen very often. I'm going to go back to one of our earlier slides on the economy. And again, this slide is something I give advisors, but it's certainly open to anybody, and we can.
Here, let me just explain the chart. Before, interest rates was going up, so they were very low. And just if you're listening and you can't see this visually, just they're going almost straight up. And so to the point where short-term rates are now higher than long-term rates, that's what they call the inverted yield curve. You actually make more money by giving someone your money for – so if you're lending money out, you're making more if you give it to someone for less time than you do if you give it out for a long time, which is counterintuitive. So it's a rare event, and normally it's actually a negative signal for the economy. Is that a fair statement? Normally an inverted yield curve is a negative – sediment or negative.
I think it is fair. We're jumping around these pretty quickly, and I apologize. But yes, usually the longer you lend your money for, you get a higher rate. That's intuitive, and it makes good business sense as well as good common sense. But occasionally, short-term rates will push above longer-term rates. And the reason is that market forces are what really drive those longer-term rates, or inflation expectations of the market, or growth expectations of the market. Well, the short end of the curve is driven by something different entirely, called the Federal Open Market Committee, or the FOMC, or the Federal Reserve, or Chairman Powell and his, you know, voting members on that committee. So they can vote to have short-term rates at any level, which may or may not correspond to where longer-term rates are. So normally they're lower. But again, since there are two different driving factors of those two data points, you can end up with an inverted yield curve, which now brings me to the slide here on the U.S. economy. I've got a slide on the right side of my chart with some economic indicators. I've got the S&P 500 in the top going all the way back to 1970. And the second pane below the S&P 500 has a blue squiggly line and a purple squiggly line. Well, what these lines represent are the difference between the 10-year U.S. Treasury and in blue, the 2-year U.S. Treasury, and in purple, the 3-month Treasury. So just think about the purple for just a minute. That's the line we looked at on the last chart. So normally, this purple line is above zero, and that means the 10-year Treasury has a higher yield than the 3-month Treasury by this number of percentage points. Well, right now, it's minus 107, meaning the 10-year Treasury is around 3.5 or 4, the 3-month Treasury is 5. So again, this is the inverted yield curve when the blue and purple line dip below zero. Doesn't happen very often. There's been 4 or 5 events since 1980, a few more in the 70s, but since 1980, really only 4 or 5 events. And what I'm trying to point out on this chart is you can see the pink vertical stripes on the chart. Right. Those are economic recessions. And to your point, Brett, once you see an inverted yield curve, you very often, on average, 12 months later, see an economic recession. It happened in 1988. It happened in 19. There was a recession in 90. You had an inverted yield curve before the 2000 bear market, an inverted yield curve before the global financial crisis. Interestingly, you had an inverted yield curve before the bear market in 20 for COVID. So it was, yes, COVID was part of it, but you had an inverted yield curve beforehand. And certainly you have an inverted yield curve now with the 3-month Treasury more than one full percentage point.
So in English, what does this mean for an investor and or business owner today?
Yeah, and mainly for business owners, because investors are, I want to answer that question a little differently. But we're looking for at our firm a bumpy economy over the next year, probably the back half or toward the end of 2023 to the 2024 timeframe. And the reason I say that is, again, if you look at the chart here and you compare those red stripes to where the purple and blue lines go below zero, there is a time lag. The average, and it's a small sample size, is about a year. That yield curve inverted in November. So probably a rocky economy toward the fourth quarter of this year and certainly into the first quarter of next year. Now, again, that will probably impact all businesses, and that's the answer for the business owner. I'm giving you a little bit of a different answer because I'm optimistic on the stock market. But again, it's because the stock market is a leading economic indicator. In fact, it was designated that, I believe, in 1937. And so for 85 years, even the economists, that the stock market leads the economy. So when you go to plan your investments, again, speak to a trained professional like you, but also realize that the stock market is a leading economic indicator and the economy is not a leading stock market indicator. You want to make sure you keep those two straight and don't just plan for your retirement based on what you're reading in the headlines, which may get kind of scary here in the next 6 to 12 months.
That's a whole nother conversation. Yes. That's a whole nother conversation.
So. Yes. Yes.
Okay. So with that, then let's talk about, and I think CPI below that, which is inflation. Let's talk about inflation.
Great. And then I'll keep it on this slide. And thank you for letting me show these slides.
I appreciate it.
Before I get to CPI, you can see one green line below those yield curves. This is the index of all leading economic indicators. You can see it has a good track record of rolling over some undefined period of time before those red stripes. It's rolling over again. But the one you wanted to focus on, I agree with, Brett, is the brown line below, which is CPI. Now, there are various ways to measure inflation. CPI is probably the most well-known and the most popular. The folks at the Federal Reserve use other measures, and they do this as well. But again, most people have heard of CPI, which is why it's on this chart.
And for our listeners who are just listeners then, just to clarify or paint a verbal picture for them. So looking at consumer price index, which is the price of goods historically going back to the '70s. The '70s, it was a high spike, 80s, a high spike, and it's been pretty flat for 30 years, 40 years almost.
Yes.
And then boom, there's a shot back up. So it's, there was a lot of inflation in the '70s and eighties, came down in the '90s, mid 2000s and first 20 years of 2020 or the 2000s, and then it's shot back up. So it almost looks like a U. In a way, with a flat bottom of the U, if that's what we're looking
at. No, that's a great way to describe it. It almost looks like an EKG chart, and certainly not as perfect.
Not a healthy one.
Not a healthy one now. But between, you know, 80 to 2020, it really stayed in the 0 to 5% range, which is a manageable amount of inflation. You know, prices should drift up a little bit over time. It's not a bad thing when they drift up marginally. You don't want to see them go below zero for long, as they did here after the financial crisis. That represents deflation, and that can be a problem. When you're in a deflationary economy, it's hard to get things moving again. I'm taking a little bit of a tangent here, but just think back to buying a TV over the last 20 years. We all know the prices of TVs go down. So you always hold off on that purchase and wait for the next good one. And you find yourself holding off and waiting and never buying a TV. Well, the company that makes TVs and needs to sell them may not sell them as quickly as they like, which means they have to cut their costs. When they cut their costs, they sometimes lay off people. Well, now you have fewer people who can buy a TV. So we all know TV prices are going to go down. So we wait even longer. So you end up with what's called a deflationary spiral when prices are actually going down, which can be a huge problem for an economy. We're not seeing that now, obviously, and this low and steady area is great. But you're right, Brett. In the 70s, we saw actually three spikes. You can't see the start of the first one, but a spike into 1970, a spike into 74, and then a spike into 80, all above the 5% range. You can see another little blip above 5% in the early 90s and a little blip above 5% around 08, and both of those, and of course in the 70s and 80s, all have a red stripe with them. The point being, anytime you get inflation above 5%, at least in a sustainable manner on CPI, you usually have a recession. So it's another really good signal of some stress in the economy, and we all feel it every day. We know we can spend less, or our food costs more, or we get mad at the gas station. But it's a stressful situation, and it's a way to think of what is going on in the economy. It's just, you know, it's not as fun. It's a little more stressful. You have to worry a little bit more, and certainly worry about if you're on a, you know, adjustable rate mortgage, what's going to happen to that if interest rates keep going up. And inflation can be a real problem for the economy and for families in general. And that spike on the right hand side that almost made it to 10% is exactly what you're referring to in the problem with CPI right now.
And the nice thing though about that chart for our listeners who can't see, you'll notice, well, I'll just explain that interest goes up, but it doesn't stay up. Luckily, it goes up and kind of comes back down. So as the Fed's been raising rates to combat inflation. So a lot of our listeners may not even know, like, why is the Fed raising rates? What's the purpose of raising rates?
That's a good question, because if you look at the surface and you wonder why they're pushing short-term interest rates above long-term rates, it really doesn't make much sense. And the reason is that there's a long lag between what they call monetary policy and the impact on the economy. And what they're really trying to do is impact the economy by what they call reducing demand, because inflation is a function of more demand for goods than there are goods. So you can fix that one of two ways. You can make more goods, which is, you know, fix the supply chain kind of answer and bring more goods into our economy for us all to buy. Or you can reduce the demand form, which is the painful way, by having an economic slowdown or economic recession so that fewer people are comfortable buying some of those things like TVs and homes and Super Bowl tickets or whatever. And that's what the Fed is embarking on right now, is they're trying to reduce demand in the economy. And that's why the line below CPI is the one that worries us the most. It is a line with a moving average over it, blue and red. And that's the number of new claims for unemployment insurance. And it hasn't moved up yet. And the Biden administration is very happy that employment is so strong. And I'm happy it's strong too. But where we disagree with the administration is that we don't think that's a leading economic indicator. We think that's a lagging economic indicator. And usually once companies come under stress is when they start laying people off, not when they are worried about stress or think there might be some stress out there. They've usually got to be under some pretty significant stress, which again is why claims for unemployment insurance is typically thought of as a lagging economic indicator. So we're hoping that one stays low, but we're worried about a spike in unemployment before this rough patch in the economy has run its course.
Okay. So in summary, then, putting all this together, and I want to speak for you. So you're saying the next few, actually right now, late February, early March, things are looking okay for the stock market. Mm-hmm. The economy is facing some headwinds, and you're based upon just graphical historical information, it looks like the third and fourth quarter of 2023 may be rough for the U.S. economy.
Yeah, I think that's the best estimate anybody can come up with right now. And it's not that my economic analysis is better than anybody else's. It's just the historical average is that it's about a 12-month lag between that inverted yield curve to an economic recession. Now, again, the stock market is looking better than you might expect right now. And I'm glad we got a chance to go through that slide. Market internals are firming. But bottoming is a, you know, not a one-day process. It's a four-step process. And you have to set that initial low. You've got to test it. Then you've got to see some upside follow through, which we've seen. And then that breakout usually gets tested. And that's where we are now. Now, that test could fail. So we might be back here in a month, or maybe you'll watch our weekly video, or I'll come to Southern California again when it's not under a blizzard warning and actually have lunch with you. And we can talk about how the breakout failed if it did, or whether it held. But I think that's an important test right now for the market, because if the market holds and turns up here, that's a leading economic indicator. And that may help us all assuage all of our fears that the economy may only fall into a slight rough patch, not a huge. I think that's
but every time that curve's been inverted, though, and CPI is at a certain level, there's always been a red line after it historically. Or is there ever, have we ever had these conditions and there hasn't been a recession? Even a short one, or a slow pullback, so to speak, or a soft landing is what they like to say.
Yeah, and I'd have to really blow this chart out and look at it pretty hard with you to see if there were any little teeny ticks under there. But the inversion we have in the yield curve right now is the largest inversion since 1980. So and instead of looking for the small, you know, incursions below that zero line, I'd like to just reinforce the fact that we've got a big inversion here. We've got a Federal Reserve that is very hawkish and pushing up rates far more than the market is willing to discount, or to a rate that the market doesn't think is justified based on expectations for growth and inflation. So that's a big inversion, and there's a good chance, you know, something may pop in the economy here and not in a good way. Housing has already been weak. We've already seen it there. You can argue that maybe housing has hit its bottom and it's picking up a little bit. But again, I don't know that that's a sustainable trend. And by that, I'm speaking to the NAHB index, which I do not have a chart of. But the situation where you have these inverted yield curves per certain industries under stress, and one of the classics is housing because it is so interest rate sensitive. As interest rates go up, home buyers really do make different choices or postpone choices, and it's a very direct relationship between those rising interest rates. So I do think it's probably a pretty safe bet to expect a bumpy economy toward the end of 23 and early 24. If the market turns up and holds, there's two things that could happen. One, you have maybe a short cycle, and the market, you know, gets back up to its new highs and maybe has a one-year advance and starts to roll over again and provides a correct leading indicator. Or the market breaks, the breakout in the market we recently saw just doesn't hold and it starts going down and breaking those lows at 3,600 again, which is, again, I think that's the less likely scenario right now. I think right. The more likely scenario is we've had a good breakout, but maybe we have a short cycle and maybe stocks are great through the end of this year before we see a little more meaningful talk.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you sharing and clarifying that. You don't have to share a screen anymore. That can make some people dizzy. Makes me
perfect.
A little dizzy too.
I was getting ready to get rid of it.
Good. So with that though, just to put it in context, like housing, everyone talks about housing and real estate's been there, and real estate's just been a one-way ride since 08, 09. People forget how much the real estate crashed in 08-09. Yeah. Let's say the demand is there. However, just put things in perspective. If you had a 2% mortgage, which you did a year ago, year and a half ago, could potentially have a 2% mortgage, you have a $500,000 house or a mortgage, that's $10,000 a year interest cost. Now rates are 6. Okay, so, well, 6 times $500,000 or 6 times 5, that's $30,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So you go from paying $10,000 a year to own something that's worth $500,000. Now it's going to cost you 3 times that each year to have the same house. So the question is, who can afford to pay 3 times as much for the same thing? So basically that's the cost of money to have that $500,000 home just went up 300% per year for the same buyer. Mm-hmm. Most buyers can't afford that, right? So that is just one direct impact right there. It's like, what can your money afford to buy? And if you need to borrow, use someone else's money, what is the cost of that borrowing doing? And with Fed raises rates, it gets more expensive. So let's talk through it. When things get more expensive, people spend less. So then if you're spending less, if I'm not giving you a dollar, then you don't have a dollar to give someone else. So let's talk about the money multiplier concept for a second, mm-hmm. and just how that impacts the economy. And then we'll we'll end on that note.
Well, and I think you hit it exactly right. And I don't really want to add anything to that. What I would say is these trends in interest rates have that exact impact and further ones. So for example, we've all been conditioned to buy a home and that's part of your retirement plan because home prices always go up. Well, home prices have always gone up because interest rates have always gone down, and the phenomenon you just so eloquently articulated works in reverse, right? So the home may not be the slam dunk savings account that it used to be because for that to occur, home prices need to keep going up. And when interest rates rise, there's a pretty big lid on that because of fewer people want to buy your home. Now, again, if you're locked in at 2%, good for you, but don't plan on that home quadrupling in value over the next 10 years when you want to sell it. The other one that's very, very important, and again, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic on this, but a lot of people build portfolios with bond funds in them. And, you know, there's some great shops out there, and we have fixed income products as well. But let's say you manage a bond fund, Brett, and your fund yields 5%, and mine yields only 4.75. Well, people are going to buy yours and not mine. Well, how do I get my yield up to match yours? Well, I have to sell some of the old bonds in my portfolio, which maybe were yielding 3 and 4%, and buy new ones at 5% to keep up with you. So the point I make is, as a bond manager, we are incentivized to compete with each other on yield. Well, when we do that in a rising rate environment, those bonds I'm selling to keep up with you and then you're going to sell to keep up with me are bonds that are not being sold at par. The bond managers are always selling them at less than par, and a bond fund constantly erodes your net asset value by selling things at a capital loss. So I always, you know, suggest to advisors who have clients who want some income, put them in bonds that exactly or that have a maturity date or actual bonds instead of bond funds, because at that point in time when the bond matures, you get your money back, or some alternative income product. And again, you know, our firm has quite a few of those, and I don't want to mention them here, but there are ways to generate income in a less risky way. And the ways people have been doing so over the past 30 to 40 years are now becoming more risky than people realize. And it's all because of that trend in interest rates that affects, again, a headwind on the price of a house now instead of a tailwind on the price of a house. The 60-40 portfolio had a built-in tailwind for 40 years. Now it's got a built-in headwind for 40 years or however long this rising interest rate environment.
Right. So this is a conversation. We could have this call every single day because things change in the economy every day and the markets change every day. And then we've got the Ukraine war and all these. There's always something, right? And
absolutely.
The media, and I will just share, the media wants us – the media gets paid by more or less selling bad news because that catches more attention than negative news. And I think there's a Time article out there that goes back from 1800, just shows all the horrible things that have happened in the world each year for 100 years that were a doomsday event. But the economy over time has always gone up over time. Maybe not every day, but over periods of time, the economy's gone up. And one just closing piece that, I use when I'm chatting with clients and prospects. I said, hey, if you gave me an investment or told me about an investment, if you gave me a dollar today and in 10 years, I'll give you a dollar back. Would you want to do that investment? And I was like, no. Well, that was the stock market from 99 to 09. 10 years, nothing happened.
Yep.
Right. But then from 09, if you had a dollar and then you held it till last year, and even this year, we've had some pullback, you could have $5, $6 in your pocket. Is that something you want? Right. But you would have to wait those 10 years before you even have those $5 or $6. So the question is, what's the timeline? How much should you invest? Realizing you don't have control over any of it. Just know over time, the game goes up, right? The markets go up over time. What time and how much and for how long? No one knows. There is no expert that knows anything and everything. So to end the call, and I'll just ask you to kind of chime with your thoughts. Talk to an advisor. Know that no one knows what in the world is really going to happen. No one has a crystal ball. The experts, no one called a lot of these financial debacles that happened. Very, very few called it correctly. The 08 when Merrill Lynch failed and Lehman Brothers failed and all these firms failed. None of the experts saw that coming, right? None of the, maybe one or two. So no one has a crystal ball. Have a plan. Know it's going to go up. Know it's going to go down, meaning the markets, but also diversify too. The concept of diversification, stocks and bonds, there's no good or bad ones. They are what they are. Life insurance, protect against risk. There's no good or bad. It's just numbers. Investments in real estate, there's no good or bad. It's just about numbers. Do the numbers work for you and can it work? So having a diversified approach with many different investments may be something that's a prudent and appropriate approach. What are your thoughts just overall for our business owners and investors?
Well, the only thing I'd really add there is, again, it goes back to the military training we both have. You've got to have a plan. You've got to have a plan to deviate from, because no great plan survives contact with the enemy. Or I think, as Mike Tyson said, it's great to have a plan until you get hit in the mouth.
And then the face, yeah.
All plans go out the window when you get hit in the face. And again, I think having a plan and knowing expectations is important. I would also add, and this is, again, our personal differences, is sure. I think you want to listen to the market. I agree. None of the pundits really can help keep you safe. If you want to know about anything, learn yourself. I'm sort of self-taught in the markets. And again, I've been able to navigate them. But I put my time and my talent and my energy into that, not running a different business. So if you are running a different business, find a great advisor who's in touch with having a good plan and having good products at his service, so that he has a different tool for a different environment. Because I'll tell you, not everything's a nail, and you just can't go through life with a hammer. You have to generate income differently sometimes. You have to protect a portfolio differently sometimes. And then there are some times, like hopefully in about a month, where you can use less protection because the market will have tested successfully. But we're not quite there yet, but there are times to, again, know you're in a good market environment and know when you need to take a little less risk and take some money off the table or put it other places and have those plans to deviate from.
Mike, I can't believe you just said not everything's a nail. Remember, I'm a marine tanker. My job is to blow stuff up and hit things hard. So I don't think that's true. No, it is definitely true. So Mike, this has been a great call. You're a smart man, amazing man. I want to go for a ride in F8. Well, F-14s have been gone for a long time, but I want to go up with you sometime and fly around a little bit and see what you guys do or did back in the glory days. Thanks so much for being here. Let's have you back on in 6 months and have an update and see if we were right or wrong.
I would love to. I would love it, brother. Thank you for the time today. It's been a pleasure, and a pleasure to speak to your audience.
Likewise, brother. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass podcast. Don't forget to click the follow button to become notified when new episodes become available. Securities offered through IFP Securities LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through IFP Investors LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, a registered investment advisor. IFP and Strategic Wealth Endeavor INC are not affiliated. The views expressed are that of the host and are for informational purposes only, and in no event should be construed as an offer to buy or sell securities. Opinions expressed are subject to change without notice and do not take into account the particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs of individual investors. Neither IFP Investors LLC, IFP Securities LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, nor their affiliates offer tax or legal advice. Interested parties are strongly encouraged to seek advice from qualified tax and/or legal experts regarding the best options for your particular circumstances. The information given herein is taken from sources that IFP Advisors LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners.